Well, let's take your stories, your questions with Richard Aesop as we talk about poltergeists, moving graveyards, haunted hospitals next. And we are back, our final hour with Richard Aesop as we talk about the other side. Richard, what's next for you? What are your next projects?
Well, after I head back across the pond to the UK to investigate Bodmin Jail and the Jamaica Inn, amongst a few other kind of places, I'm back to the United States. I'll be heading back to Gettysburg this summer and investigating a place called the Monroe House, which is once again in Indiana and is supposedly the scene of a pretty dark, negative haunting.
How many places do you think are haunted just in the United States?
You know, I think it depends upon degree and definition, George. I think that you can see paranormal activity in many homes that's transitory. It's fairly common once you have a member of the family die. I think many people have stories, especially as we get close to holidays such as Christmas, where just strange things seem to happen around the house that imply that perhaps our loved ones are dropping back in to see how we're doing. So I think it's a lot more widespread than you might suspect.
I think so, too. And let's talk about the Malvern Manor in Iowa. Tell me about that place.
Oh, one of my favorite places in Iowa. Malvern Manor used to be a hotel, at least when it was originally built in the 19th century, and soon became a nursing home and a care home for those who were addicted or had special needs and really had nowhere else to go in the community. When it was closed down and left derelict, the place had gotten the reputation for being haunted, and I was given the opportunity to investigate that with a team of fellow paranormal investigators, and it's a fascinating place. We talked earlier on about the Villisca Axe Murder House. When Malvern Manor was a hotel, it was formed to service the railroads, as so many towns and hotels were back in the 19th century, George. They existed pretty much so that travelers across the country on the railroads could hop off for the night, you know, sleep in a clean bed, have a bath, have a drink or two, and then be on their way in the morning. And there is a theory that the Villisca Axe murderer may have spent the night at Malvern Manor either before the killing.
Creepy.
Genuinely creepy.
I'm not sure I'd want to spend the night in these places.
You know, I get that totally. A number of people think I'm pretty strange for doing it, but I'm pretty sure a lot of your listeners share a similar fascination. I've always loved the stories behind it all. If you leave the ghosts and the activity aside, many of the time I'll go to somewhere like this and nothing at all happens. You know, more often than not, in fact. But what you always get to do is you get a window into the lives of those who came before us. Those generations that built this country, you know, those generations on whose shoulders we stand. And it is terrific to be able to look at their stories and sometimes, unfortunate enough, to tell them in books. It's a wonderful occupation.
Let's go to the phones. PJ's in Denver, Colorado, not too far from where you are now, Richard. Hi, PJ. Welcome to the program.
Hi, George. How are you?
Great. Thanks.
I hope you remember me. I'm a realtor. I'm 56 years old. I talked to you 4 months ago. I was stage four organ loss with 90% kidney loss.
Yes.
And you let me go on the air. And I did get a lot, because I'm a realtor, you know, my information is with the state of Colorado on computer. So you allowed me to give my post office box and phone number. And I had about 25 people calling me, writing me and stuff like that. So thank you for that. But I might tell you is I am stage five right now. I received a letter from my doctor telling me 3 weeks ago that I was stage five, and he's met with me as of last week. And my question is to you is that I am Catholic, and I've well prepared for death. I think I've been fortunate enough to do everything that I was supposed to be doing as a Catholic and as a Christian to get prepared. I'm afraid, but I'm prepared for what I think I'm going to face. And my question is, are these people who haunt, are the ones that are caught up, that are not prepared? I feel like when I die, I believe that because of my faith, I'm going to have a choice. I'm either going to go to heaven, or as Catholic, we have a choice to go to purgatory, which eventually gets us to heaven, or to hell, depending on where I'm judged. So I was always taught, whatever you have inside of you, you see in others. If you see good in others, it's because you have good in yourself. So my question again is a person doomed to haunt or to be, I don't want to be here, I don't want to be walking around this earth, but are you doomed? Is it something that you have to go through? Or if you're well prepared, do you have to become a poltergeist? So I'd like to know an answer, and I'll stay online.
I'll put you on hold to listen. Go ahead, Richard.
Okay. PJ, thanks for calling in tonight. I really appreciate your question. And first of all, I'll preface this by saying that your beliefs are 100% your beliefs, and I totally respect them, okay? Based on doing this now for 24 years, I don't think you have anything to fear about what happens afterward. I've got a good friend of mine who is a paranormal investigator and is also a Catholic priest. And personally, PJ, I'm an agnostic. I try and keep an open mind spiritually, you know? And I'll tell you very briefly an experience that happened to me a few years ago. I brought something negative home with me from an investigation. And my wife was not happy, to say the least.
That happens.
So it did. And so we had shadow figures around the house. We heard a woman's voice in the house when there was nobody here. My dog was going crazy whenever we would hear this voice. And so I really didn't know how to deal with it. It never happened to me in 20-odd years of doing this. How do you get rid of it when you take your work home with you and you don't need to? So I called my friend Stephen the priest, and I said, look, Stephen, I'm not Catholic. I wouldn't even say that I'm a Christian. I have the greatest respect for those who are, but that's just not my belief system. But can you help? And he said, Richard, I'll come on over. So he came on over with all of his, you know, his priest attire and his box of, I don't know what to call it, but it was what he would use for his blessing rituals and so forth. And I said, Stephen, I really appreciate you coming over, but is this going to work? Because I don't believe what you believe. And he said, Richard, what's important here is the intent. That's the key thing. He said, it's not about the specific belief system that you have. He said, I'll do this cleansing for you. I'll pray in the name of God. It will work for you. I can pretty much promise you. And so I kept an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen did his ceremony. He started at the top of my house, and he moved from room to room. He was applying holy water to all of the windows and doors.
Was he splashing it everywhere?
No. He was dabbing a cross, actually, on all of the windows and doors. And as I thought about his pattern, the way that he moved through my house, it was interesting. It was almost as if he was sweeping something negative out, you know, from room to room into the hallway down the stairs, and then again into the main hallway and then out the front door. And he said a few blessings, stopped absolutely everything from happening. And he said, don't worry, mate. You may not believe in God, but he sure believes in you. It's the intent that counts, and you're a good man, and that will matter. So the reason I mentioned that, PJ, is I'm sure that you're a good man too, and I have no doubt whatsoever that you will be able to go wherever it is you choose to go once you pass, that you will not be stuck around if you do not choose to.
Keep fighting the good fight, PJ. I know that's tough. Up to stage 5, it doesn't get much worse than that, does it? Joe in Long Island, New York's with us. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
A couple of questions.
Sure.
First one, people call on the phone and, you know, like a woman's voice or something like that. It's almost like teasing. Could that be a witchcraft, an entity, a ghost? You know, or could potentially be for some people on their computer coming through. And then my second thing would be on the owls. You know, that seem that the giant owls that show up, are they kind of an intelligent being that's looking over the situation, the wise owl? And also you have the clowns, too, which people are spotting, you know, that are unexplained.
Well, I'm going to defer, actually, the first question about the phone calls to you, George, purely because you did a bunch of research on this for your book. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, I'll do that next. Go ahead with his second question.
Okay. So your second question, sir, was, I believe, are owls spiritual beings?
Right.
You know, one thing that I've learned in my field is that too few of us, by which I mean so-called experts, most of us aren't, we're just people that have studied this for a long time, too few of us are willing to say, I don't know. And the phenomenon you're talking about, the question you've just asked me, I'm not qualified to answer it, so I'm going to have to be totally honest and tell you I don't know.
That's interesting. As far as people calling with different voices, whether they've been bewitched, who knows? We get a lot of phone calls on this program, and it's entirely possible that those from the other side can try to do all kinds of strange things. And our work talking to the dead, lots of different voices come through. It's possible. But I think Joe was talking about in terms of tricking women voices to trick a guy. I don't think I've had that happen here.
I've not had that happening either. There's certainly not a record of that in my case files.
I keep waiting, but the call never comes.
Well, maybe one day your ship will come in, George.
Let's go to Mike, truck driving in Michigan, first-time caller. Michael, go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call, George, and Richard, amazing program.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, mate.
I have not told this story to hardly anybody because everybody looks at me like I'm nuts. But 20 years ago, my father, I got a phone call from my mother. My father had small cell lung cancer. She said, you better get up to the hospital. Your father is not breathing well. I was an hour and a half away. I got up to the hospital, Ackley Hospital in Muskegon, parked in the parking lot, was going to go into the rear entrance of the hospital to go up to his room. And the lights were out on the back door, and a woman in a black dress, she was wearing heels, totally in black, beautiful shape, could not see her face because there was a black veil over the hat she was wearing, came through the door. I went, tried to go through the door to go in, and I couldn't get in. So I had to go around to the front of the hospital. I went through the emergency room. They told me how to get upstairs. When I got there, my mother said, your dad passed away about 3 minutes ago. I went into the room. Of course, his eyes were still open. I could feel his spirit, almost see a shadow above him. Said goodbye to him, closed his eyes, and came out. And my mom said, it's too bad you just couldn't get here. And I said, well, I was here, and some woman came out the back door of the hospital, but I couldn't get in. And the doctor looked at me, and he said, nobody came out that door. That door is locked at night. Huh. It does not work. And
you know better.
You know, I know better.
Yeah.
I mean, it was plain as day. It was real. And I just figured out that I'd just seen the angel of death walking out with my father's soul or something.
That could be.
I'd like to get an opinion on that.
I'll let you take a stab at that, Richard.
Absolutely, and that's a remarkable story. So, did I hear that you're a truck driver?
Yes, he is.
Excellent. Thank you for everything that you do. I know that's an underappreciated profession, and so many of us depend on you for what you do. So you drive safely tonight, please. My thought on that is that there are many documented instances of figures in black, be they men, women, or children, that seem to attend upon the scenes of death, whether it is a spirit coming over to help ease the transition, which would be my take on it, or whether you choose to term it the angel of death. Some people, I think, would consider that to have a negative connotation, would consider it to be frightening. But the vast majority of such cases on record actually seem to bring great comfort to those who experience them, not so much the living that witness this, but the patients that pass themselves. They seem to almost be tending to them or caring for them. So I think that possibly this was a spirit that came to mark his passing and help him across to whatever it is that comes next.
Richard, let me ask you about angels. Where do they fit into this equation?
Well, again, you're asking an agnostic. So the term angel is one that I think seems to come from a faith-based background. And again, I respect people's rights to believe in whatever they would like. Having talked to a number of mediums over the years, I think it's entirely possible that they are more highly evolved spirits, perhaps those that have incarnated many, many times and have gone beyond the materialistic, everyday, kind of meaner-spirited aspect that many of us have. And I think that they may choose to come back and do some good in the world.
Overall, are you pretty upbeat about the fate of all of us?
In terms of us as a
planet?
Not really.
Really? Not really.
I think it flies in the face of the evidence in terms of the way the world's going. But that being said, it seems that almost every generation has thought that. Every generation has had its the end of the world is nigh kind of thought process, hasn't it?
It sure has.
My hope is that we gain wisdom that is appropriate or commensurate with our technology level.
That's really
to me what it hinges on. I think we're at a critical point in human development.
Let's go out to Danville, Indiana. Julie is with us. Hi, Julie. Go ahead.
I just got a quick question.
Sure.
Where was the I-70 Strangler? Where was he from?
He was from the area of Carmel, Indiana.
Okay, that's what I thought you said. Oh, my, that's not very far.
Not far at all, Julie.
Where is the house at, the farm?
Well, Fox Hollow Farm is in that vicinity, but it's a private residence, so
it's
not one that can be visited.
I just wanted to drive
God,
past.
Who would want to live there?
Yeah, really.
Well,
yeah.
You know, I couldn't
imagine. Owners,
and, you know, I feel very comfortably that I can talk about it. They were offered, I hate to say it was a steal, but this is an 18.5-acre farm.
Okay.
They got it for considerably less than such a house would normally go. They just had to be okay with the fact that the most heinous things had happened there. And they were. They just didn't bargain on the fact that it would also be haunted.
I mean, would you live there?
I personally would not.
No. Not with that kind of horror and grief that went through in that place.
Right.
How old was the serial killer when he died?
Oh, Herb Baumeister, when he died, I want to say that he was in his 30s. I'd have to get you an exact.
That's all?
But not old. Yeah, not greatly old.
Not at all. Not at all. Do these activities seem to be more prevalent now than they were 10, 20, 30 years ago?
I don't think so. I think, though, that we're more likely to misconstrue everyday things, thanks to the fact that ghost shows are everywhere. You know, it's something the public has become fascinated with again. And this kind of thing experiences surges. If you look at history, we saw surges with the rise of spiritualism in the aftermath of the Civil War, in the aftermath of the Great War, and so on and so forth. I think that we're at a point where, again, the public is fascinated with this particular topic, and it's become a part of culture, pop culture, as Mr. Aaron Sagers talked with you about the other night. Big
yeah.
shout out to Aaron. He's a friend of mine and a great guy. So I think that interest has never been higher, but I think a side effect of that is that we have more people than ever that think I can just buy a K2 meter from Amazon and go to a haunted location and get evidence. So I think we have a lot more false positives than before, too.
All right, well, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment and take final phone calls with Richard right here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't touch your dial. And welcome back to Coast on our next program, our Friday night and the Saturday morning show. Bill Bean joins me as we talk about Stranger Than Fiction, and then we'll have those special Friday night into Saturday morning open lines, of course. We're going to be back in a moment with Richard Asap, and we're going to take final phone calls as well on Coast to Coast. Welcome back to Coast. Richard Asap is with us, of course, talking about the paranormal, the unusual. These graveyard, you've been to cemeteries. What do you think of cemeteries, Richard?
I don't think they're particularly haunted. In fact, nobody dies in one, so I think they're probably some of the least places.
They're probably all trying to get up and leave.
Well, they've already up and gone, right? I mean, speaking personally, I don't know that I would choose to hang around a cemetery, a place where I was buried or not. You know, what about you, George? Would you?
No, not at all. I would hate to be, I can't rest anyways. I want to get up and about.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, there are a couple of well-documented cemetery hauntings, but for the most part, I find it hard to understand why a cemetery would be haunted.
Absolutely. Let's take some final calls here for you. Bill, truck driving in Minnesota, east of the Rockies. Hi, Bill. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Richard.
Hello there.
How you doing?
Good, morning, sir.
Bill. Okay, Richard, I live right by that Bondurant-Farrar school y'all are talking about.
Yeah.
And when you were doing your investigation, my son and I, we were there, and we took a brand new spirit box down there with the external speaker.
Mm-hmm. What happened?
Okay, and me and the other groups, we were there, the speakers, the external speakers died. Brand new,
jeez,
out of the box, brand new, fresh batteries. We walked out of the auditorium where the shadow figures supposed to be up on stage, and the spirit box started working again.
The electronics, that happens all the time, too.
I don't know if you saw the show Ghost Stalkers with John Tenney, but John had that very same experience with his voice recorder. He tried several times to get it to record, not only in the auditorium, but throughout the Farrar School, even just inside the front doors, and couldn't. But then he stepped outside, and it would work again.
Years ago, Richard, when I was doing my local show in St. Louis, I had a Ouija board in the studio, and everything technically went wrong until we took the Ouija board out, and everything started to work again.
Huh. So it's acting as some kind of damper on your electronics, huh?
Crazy. How does that happen?
It's a great question. I have no idea. I think that in certain cases, though, we're dealing with energies that we can't truly explain.
And we have John truck driving now in Kansas. Lots of truck drivers tonight. Hi, John.
Hi, George. Hi, Richard. Nice meeting you guys.
You too, sir.
Hi, John. As usual.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
So, quick story for you. So, when I was 17, got into it with my dad. He wanted me to go to his work with him. And I said, no, I hate you. I wish you would die. I never want to see you again. And it's pretty much beat me up for the rest of my life, you know, up until today. Well, so that night at work, he never came home. Come to find out, he actually died at work that night.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and so me and my sister was actually the ones that found him.
Oh.
So,
And that haunted you, didn't it, for years?
Oh, yes, definitely. It still does to this day. Well, the funny thing about it is that night I was dead asleep, and something woke me up. I don't know what it was. I can't explain it, but maybe 30 to 45 seconds after that, it looked like someone was shining like a bright spotlight underneath my door. And so I'm like, what the heck is going on? So I threw the head over my blanket over my covers, and all of a sudden, or over my head, and all of a sudden I took it off, and my dad was standing right there at the foot of my bed like, you know, he had just went, you know, like he was before he went to work. And he was sitting there telling me he forgives me, everything's okay, he loves me, he's in a better place, and he'll always be there for me. But and the thing is he got me a brand new pair of shoes. I don't know where he got them from, and everybody thought that I stole them, and nobody could understand where they came from because nobody around even made those shoes yet.
Huh.
They didn't come out till like a year later, so nobody knows where they came from, but everybody thinks that I stole them still to this day, and I still have them.
Did you believe he came to comfort you?
I hope that's what he was doing, you know, but, you know, like I said,
sounds
it
like
still
it
bothers me to this day.
Oh, I understand. I understand that. That's tough to have to carry with you all these years, to be sure. But rest assured, he probably, Richard, came and asked, you know, said these things to make his son feel better.
Well, certainly. And, again, there are a lot of recorded instances in which once we're gone from the physical body, you know, we kind of realize shoes, money, whatever material stuff it is, isn't really all that important. We see what is truly important, which is love and family, and I think your dad almost certainly came back to acknowledge that with you.
Let's go to Mississippi. Bob's with us, first-time caller. Hello there, Bob.
Good morning, George, and good morning, Richard.
Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. I was going to tell you a story about something that happened to me back when I was just a young lad. I was about 7 years old. This is one of many experiences I've experienced over my lifetime, too. I've had more than one, but this one stood out in my mind. and it's still there to this day. And I don't know if it was a spiritual thing or if it was a dimensional type thing, a shift in time maybe. But I was outside playing at a friend of my grandmother's. We went to the old neighborhood where she had used to live, and we were visiting with this friend of hers. And there was these two children in a house across the street went to calling out to me. And they were asking me to come over and play with them. Well, I was forbidden to cross the road at that age by myself. And I told them, so I said, I can't. I said, I'm not supposed to cross the street. Well, their mother came out, and she said, it's okay, I'll watch you. And so I went across the street, and I went over with these children, and I went to play with them. And they invited me into the house, you see, and that's where I played. They didn't come outside into the yard. They were still in the house. And there was a big porch around the house, sort of wrapped around it. And anyway, I went into the house, and I was playing with these children with the toys and everything. It was all decorated real pretty and fancy-like. And the mother asked me if I wanted some orange juice with them, and I drank some orange juice and set at the kitchen table. And I was still able to look out across the road at my grandmother's friend's house and see them if they came out, which they did. And they started looking for me, and they were yelling, where you at, Bob? Where you at? And I called out to them, and they couldn't hear me in the house. So I told the lady, I said, I got to go outside. My grandmother and her friend are calling for me. I'm going to be in trouble. And she says, well, why don't you stay with us? So I started getting a little uneasy about that when she went to ask me to stay. And I says, no, I got to go. And so I went outside on the porch, and I called out to my grandmother, and I said, I'm over here. And she said, what are you doing across the road? She says, you're not supposed to cross the street. I said, well, the lady told me it was okay, and I came over. And her friend, her last name was Bullock, Mrs. Bullock, she told me, she says, nobody's living in that house.
Said, oh, yes, boy, ma'am. Here we go.
And I said, yes, ma'am, there's people here. I said, I played with the two kids. And she says, no, there's nobody there. And they came across the street, and they went up to the door, and they looked in, and it was locked. The door was locked.
Yeah.
But I had been in there playing with them and experienced this. I mean, they were just as physical as you and I, and they were friendly, and I had a good time with them. But to this day, I've wondered if that could have been some kind of a dimensional shift or if it was actual ghost that I had experienced.
What's it sound like to you, Richard?
It could be either of the above. Those are both very valid theories. I would probably go with the possibility of them being ghosts, though. If it's a dimensional shift, you're dealing with something much more physical. Do you ever remember seeing the kids manipulate anything, any objects, anything solid, touch you, or anything like that?
I remember handling the toys. They were physical. The little girl, she did touch me on the shoulder. And I remember that.
And you could feel that?
What's that?
You could feel the touching on the shoulder?
I certainly could. It was physical.
All right. Interesting take. So what they had the ability for telekinesis, basically, or moving things.
Well, there are many, again, documented instances of spirits manipulating our world, touching it. But it's really tough to tell. It's a fascinating story. And I'm just trying to think my way through it. At what point did this stop happening to you, Bob?
Years later, I had another experience with a man. I'd never picked up a hitchhiker before. And this gentleman, he was dressed in a nice suit, had a briefcase. And he leaned down and he was motioning. This is in the same town. And he was motioning to me that he needed a ride. He threw his thumb up and smiled. And I'd never... let me by get in the car with him before that. I didn't know. I never picked up a hitchhiker until that day. And he got in the car with me, and he was talking to me, and he was asking me if I was saved. And I says, well, I think I am. I says, I was baptized. He says, no, that's not what I asked you. I said, I asked you if you were saved. I said, yes, I feel I'm saved in my heart. He says, okay. And so he told me where he wanted to go, and he was calling me by name. And he said, well, Bobby says, I got to get out and go in here. And he took him to this house. And when I left the gentleman, he prayed with me before he got out. And I left the gentleman. I got to wondering, how did he know my name? Because there was something in the car that had my name, and I hadn't told him my name. And I drove back to ask him. The house was empty. And he was nowhere to be seen.
Gosh, you're like a magnet, Bob, for these things.
Something's going on, that's for sure, because that is just two experiences. I've had many.
Richard, can somebody have that kind of magnetism for spirits?
There seem to be, I don't know if it's a magnetism or if you're just capable of perceiving things other people can't, Bob. You know, both are equally possible. It seems that some folks just have, I don't want to call it a sixth sense because I know that seems a little bit hokey, but you know what I mean.
But it
some
could be.
Some folks seem to have just that extra bit of wiring, if you will, or that extra ability that the rest of us lack.
Let's go to Brian in Louisiana now. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, George?
All is well.
Hey, Richard. Hey, I have a question. And your theory on this, we've been talking about for a good while, the soul capitulation of of beings and more and a mechanical aspect of a genetic and more genetic aspect of what life is truly is that aspect of soul encapsulation. What is your take on that?
Well, that's a tough question.
It is, and it's one that I'm not entirely sure I'm qualified to answer. I hope that doesn't sound like I'm ducking it, but as long as I've been involved with this field, I try not to speculate on stuff I haven't studied, haven't done the reading on, haven't researched, and that's an area I'm afraid I'm ignorant in, so my apologies to you.
What do you think the other side is, Richard? What is it? Is it just energy? What might it be?
I suspect it's another state of being, George. I think it's my personal belief, and here's the thing, it's a belief. You know, I can't prove it, and I don't even know if it's true. It's purely speculation based on the experiences I've had and talking to various people over the years. I think that we come to this side, this material side of life, in the same way that we go to school or college. I think that we're kind of taking the advanced course right now, because life sure as heck feels like it's hard work for a lot of us. And I think once we die, we graduate, we learn some of the lessons we wanted to. But like in any college course, you know, you can get an A, you can get a D, you can get an F. And I think that we learn the lessons we can to the best of our ability. We deal with the challenges which give rise to the lessons. And then I think the other side is kind of more our permanent home, our permanent state of being. And I think that we elect, choosing our own curriculum, I think that we elect to come on back and again, take another crack at it until we get it right. Because I think the one thing we can all agree on is each and every one of us, spiritually speaking, we need some work.
Do you believe in reincarnation?
I do. I mean, I've been looking at a lot of the cases coming out of India, especially. Where it's being studied quite seriously. And I think there is some evidence for it.
I mean, in India, they've believed in reincarnation for as long as I can remember.
Well, that's true, but there are numerous cases in which you have children in fairly isolated villages that have never traveled beyond the boundaries of that village, accurately describing having lived lives in villages, towns, and cities miles away. Information that they could not possibly know, which turns out to be independently verified. And that's tough to explain by any other conventional means.
Richard, for people who want to get a hold of you, send you an email, how do they do it?
Drop by and see me on my website if you like. I'm richardestep.net. My email is richard@richardestep.net. You can also find me on Facebook at Richard Estep Author.
Super. Thanks, Richard. Keep in touch with us, okay?
I sure will. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, my friend. Be well, and maybe we'll get together when I get up to Boulder to do our Beyond Belief television programs. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, so it's very easy for you to just send him an email. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.